What if, instead of filling your golf trip with a bunch of single-digit players, you opted for something, say, a little more edgy? A strategy that would bring you unforeseen joys and friendships you thought you'd never have. A plan that would take you from the low country of South Carolina to the highlands of Scotland. A series of trips that would bear witness to golf carts being driven into bunkers and antique ceramic rabbits being stolen. Today on Golf Buddies on Tour, building a trip that endures for years.
Big welcome to two of my best golf buddies, Blair Lieberman and Rick Hall, who are joining me today to talk really about how to start a guy's golf trip or a guy's golf group. And I'm super excited about this because my real, real one of my real favorite things that I've done in my life is to create a guy's golf group with these two gentlemen. So obviously, Blair and Rick, I know both of you, and I've known you for a long time, over 20 years. But for those listening, would you mind just introducing yourself and what you do, and we can kind of take it from there.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I'm a ad salesman at Golf Digest. Have been for coming up on 30 years, so you could say I'd never really had a job. I sell a hobby, which is a nice thing. And I live in Charleston, South Carolina. It's a beautiful day here. And I'll throw it to my friend Blair.
Sure. Born and brought up, native of Trunin, Scotland. Moved to America. Got into the golf travel business with Perigolf for about 10 years. Got involved in the same business as Rick in the media side, golf media, which I absolutely adored. And made my way south from Atlanta to Ponte Vedra Beach 5 years ago to work for the PGA Tour and help manage the sponsorship sales at about 35 events on the tour. And again, it's a passion for me. I love every day I go to work. So with the common denominator being golf.
You know, I'm going to ask you a question. I know how I've met each of you, actually. I think I met Blair first, and then I met Rick through Blair. Yeah. How did you guys meet?
Well, I was the resort and travel director at said Golf Digest, and in about 1998 or 9, mm-hmm. Can't remember exactly. It's been so long ago. I was trying to get Perigolf to run some ads in Golf Digest. So who did I have to run down? I had to run down the main man there, mm-hmm. which is our little Scottish hairless friend at the time. And so that's how Blair and I met. In fact, I don't think he never spent a penny with me.
Nope, never.
But he did invite me to play golf, and I think I lost three or four ways that day. So he actually ended up costing me money for the first time, not the last.
Rick, I could have sworn it was at a governor's conference, and it might have even been in Ponte Vedra Beach of all places. I seem to remember that sticks out, that we were just, you know, let's get out of here sort of type thing after, you know, I was trying to rummage up some business for Perigolf, and you certainly mentioned you were down there, you know, with your with Golf Digest. But I seen we went out for a few beers after that, and we're fast friends. And you know, it was the glue of golf, I think, that kept us together. But it was, God, it was the glue of laughter that kept us together, Rick.
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah, we've enjoyed a lot of jokes over the years on a lot of golf trips, and I want to kind of start talking about the something that's near and dear to the three of us, and that's something called the Blue Elephants Golfing Society that we started. But before it even had a name, it had an idea, and I know I didn't come up with it, so I'm not really quite sure how I got pulled into it, but. I don't know if it was the two of you over a couple martinis or beers that came up with the idea, but I'd love to hear about how you thought of the idea of getting a bunch of guys together to go somewhere and play golf.
Well, I actually remember it perfectly. With the three of us were in the car, but I think I think Blair should tell the ancestral story of because it really wasn't our original idea.
Certainly there's an ancestral nature of it, and that was the genesis of wanting something like that, but having something for ourselves. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Blair, remind me and the audience what happened.
Sure. 1965, the year I was born. I'm 55. So Dad started the Pink Elephants at Royal Troon Golf Club. It was himself and a couple of other village idiots that got together, and that was the genesis of the group. They didn't necessarily like a number of the members at the club, and therefore they went to start to play against home and away matches. Through Dad's business and sales, met some folks from Ferndown, and they called them the White Elephants. Met some, I think it was an RNA connection with regards to Porthcawl, Royal Porthcawl, and they started the Red Elephants. Baltray was the Green Elephants. And, certainly other chapters, but I think it was Rick and I and yourself, Michael, that said, you know, let's start our own village idiot group, over in the States. And we thought blue was a good color, hadn't been taken. And that's as simple as it was.
Yeah, I remember a detail about that. The three of us, as we did in those days, would meet at about 6 a.m. on a Saturday so we could all be home to our young families early. And we drove up and we played that golf course, Blair, you'll remember the name of it, way up north in Georgia in Dalton.
Oh, the farm.
The farm. So the three of us went up there and played golf, and we hatched the plan on the 2 hour or however long it was ride back. And that's how it came about. We decided that we would all get four people, and that we would start small, and we'd have a group of, three foursomes. So we all would get three people. And that's how it all started.
Yeah, you have a good memory.
Yeah, he does have a good memory. I didn't even remember that part. Why do you think it was a golf trip and not just kind of a local game? I remember us talking about, and I think the term village idiot is pretty appropriate, because I think we were certainly, it wasn't trying to be a highbrow game where it was like who could invite the most connected golfer, but it was much more about who could invite the biggest village idiot.
Maybe. Yeah.
But what was it about a trip? I think because our first destination was the Lake Oconee region in Georgia, yeah. But what was it about a trip that we felt was different than just getting a bunch of guys together and going and playing around the Atlanta area where the three of us lived at the time?
Well, go ahead, Blair.
No, please.
Well, you know, Michael, I've been thinking about that in preparation for your call today. And it seems to me, I went way back in my memory to childhood even. And as you guys both know, my dad was a club professional. And so all I did, my brothers and I did, was hang out at the golf course all summer. We rarely did much else, some little league and that kind of thing. But we primarily were working at the golf course, and we weren't playing. If we weren't working, we were playing. And it occurred to me as I went through my life, that I owe everything to the game. I owe my childhood. I owe my college education. I owe my livelihood for the last 30 plus years to it. And I owe every single friend that I still hold dear after all these years is through the game of golf. And that is without exception. Now, I don't think everybody could say that. They have friends that, you know, they worked with at one point or another, or they grew up with, that didn't have anything to do with golf. But I honestly can say that every friend who I still am in contact with and care about, I met through golf. Mm-hmm.
That's quite a statement. And it was it was both kind of intentional and not intentional at the same time. I mean, there were a lot of kind of, you know, serendipitous moments as part of that too. Right, right.
Undoubtedly, yeah. It's, you know, you run into somebody on a, you're out of town on business and there's a round of golf involved and you turn in, one of the people that you'd never met before turns into a friend who you still stay in touch with. It's just unlike any other activity. Mm-hmm. I won't say game or sport. It's like any other, it's like no other activity that I know of.
None.
I think we were looking to kind of bottle that in a way and replicate that in a way. And, you know, if we thought we were bringing people from kind of all over, and we kind of had a pretty wide net in terms of who we wanted to invite, I think one of the things we thought about a destination, it would have enough kind of time for let those connections and those friendships kind of, you know, breathe and get to know one another. It's a lot different to kind of come in and you play your round, you maybe have some drinks or lunch afterwards, yeah, and everybody goes their separate ways, then traveling and living and going potentially place to place or kind of camped out at one of the many places we've been fortunate to be hosted at over the years. What have you kind of noticed about that camping part, that kind of we're all located in one place and the space that it gives us and the ability to kind of to meet these people, Blair, over a certain amount of days? It's been interesting, hasn't
it? Yes, you know, I would say that you also had to find the right people, and it took us a long time. We've ebbed and flowed in our membership. We've been as strong as 18, 20, and as short as, you know, 6 or 8, you know, and just we've always had that core group, all from different walks of life, you know, from Tony the Sausage King to Dr. Katsimakis, you know, just it's unconditional love when we see them come down, you know, whether it be to Secession or even when they were at Cuscawilla, it was that 2 or 3 days of, you know, just letting your hair down, you know, being away from, you know, a pretty hectic life with young kids, all of the above, but it took us a while, but the retreat for me was everything. You know, to have it in my hometown, it just wouldn't make sense. Even as close as Cuscawilla was, it was Lake Oconee was like another world. You know, I think that the common denominator is still golf, but it's more camaraderie. It's more humor. Humor is everything to me. And, you know, whether or not you've got you know, a thick enough skin to put up with the jokes, you know, that's part and parcel. But it's the retreat for me. And that's where Dad, I think, felt, you know, getting away from Troon and going to Ferndown and staying at people's houses. And, you know, they had dormy houses at Ferndown and, you know, Porthcawl and all that stuff. They got away. And then the wives did get involved, you know, in some trips and various things like that. But he had those 2 or 3 trips per year, the Bachelor Trophy. They had a home and away, you know, all of that. So I suppose I took it from the excitement that he had in his life of just getting away.
Talk a little bit about, you know, thinking about who to invite. And, you know, as people are listening to this, there are probably guys that are out there that are, you know, clearly a little bit younger, maybe where we were 20 years ago.
I thought about that too, Michael, and I wanted to tell a quick story, if I might, about a couple of swings and misses. One was mine and one was yours.
Oh, gosh. Okay, go ahead. I'm a little fearful because you do have such a good memory, Rick, but let's go for it.
And the names will remain out of the story, but your swing Please. And a miss, you invited the chap that on the side, I think he had an embroidery business, and we wanted to get some hats, you know, or some goodies for the group.
Some swag, as the kids would call it these days.
So he took care of the hats, and about a month after the outing, I got a bill for the hats, which was totally expected, never expected free hats. But at the bottom of the invoice, it had a service charge. And I remember the next time I paid it. I wrote the check the same day the invoice came. And I remember saying to you, Michael, he's out. And you agreed, and he never had grass under his feet again with us.
No, he didn't. You can't fight that one. That goes against what the group's all about.
He could have upcharged the hat that I would have had no idea about that.
Well, he probably should have charged more since if he knew he was getting kicked out.
Exactly right.
To be honest.
Instead of the hats costing 20, he should have charged 25 and let it go at that. He still would have been around today. But that service charge was just too much for me to take. My swing and a miss was funnier than that. So we had a neighbor when we lived back in Atlanta, and we used to do a lot of socializing together, lots of martinis on the driveway and barbecues and Thanksgivings and whatnot. And he said that he wanted to learn how to play golf. So I helped him get set up. I got him some clubs and took him to a range and showed him some of the basics. And after about my third, martini the following Friday night, I invited him to Blue Elephants. This chap had never set foot on a golf course. And so I brought him and I played with him. And he hit his first tee shot. He actually got it down the fairway about 50 or 60 yards. And so then I told him to pick up his tee and come with me. And he did. And we got around. He played a few holes. He skipped a bunch. We both drank a lot of beer. And at the end of the round, I remember looking at him and saying, Sam, and he looked at me and he said, Rick, you don't have to say it. I'm never playing the rest of the trip, am I? And I said, no, you're not. And I said, but what you can do is, and he said, make a liquor run. And I said, exactly. And that's what he did. So.
And I would argue that the second one was a much better invite than the first one.
That's true.
He got the vibe, didn't he? He said, I got to go make a liquor run. I don't need to be playing golf anymore. And he was, it was quality. It's too bad that he didn't play golf because he would have been a quality addition for years to come.
And by the way, I'm still in touch with him. So I guess that is my one exception to the golf rule because he's still near and dear to me, even though I don't see him very often.
Very cool.
Well, we have, I mean, when you think about it, I think we've always erred on the side of uniqueness and unique kind of individuals. It's not been this domain for, you know, who belongs to exclusive clubs or who is the best, you know, handicap or anything having to do with other than just, you know, I think back to this Village Idiot comment that you made, Blair, and we have one, and again, you know, to protect the innocent, but this guy is a core member. We haven't seen him for several years, but he's a real beauty. And I remember when he went with us to Scotland for a week and only brought shorts, didn't bring any long pants.
One pair.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, the only long pants he had, and when we needed to be jacket and tie at some of the more exclusive clubs that we were visiting, he wore his rain pants in. And I think about that a lot. I think about that guy a lot. And that is exactly the kind of person that you put on a trip and you never know what's going
to
happen.
I used to send him, you know, when we would do it at Secession and I had to pay the bill so nobody could pay their own way. And I would send everybody a bill at the end of the trip. And I used to give him, no matter how many people were on the trip, let's say 12, I used to send him a full one third of the liquor bill.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? he knew it and he was fine with it.
Because typically what you do is you take the bill and you'd whack it up by, you know, the 12, the 16 guys, whatever it is, right?
So I didn't do that with the bacon and eggs or the bottles of wine, but I did it with the liquor bill.
Yeah.
Well, he did have his fair share of transfusions.
And that is part of making you a superior Blue Elephant, is you never kick about the bill.
Now, you've always told me that, Rick. You know, if you have the guy and you get the steak sandwich at lunchtime and you have a beer and the guy has the salad and the water and he goes, but I only had the salad and the water. Well, guess what? You're out.
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking that way, you shouldn't be in our group.
That's right. That's right.
So, we've brought up some names like places like Secession, and you know, we've been very, very fortunate to have some great friends in the business, and that's a wonderful place. And for the listeners who haven't been there, it's just such a, if you ever get the chance to visit there, it's a very special place. When we think about these trips, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the invite list and, you know, our own strategy about inviting interesting people, regardless of their golf skill, with the exception of Rick's friend who didn't play golf. But let's talk a little bit about the destinations. I mean, you know, resorts versus, you know, kind of being in camped, if you're fortunate enough to have access to private clubs, overseas versus domestic. How have you guys thought about that stuff during the years?
I can jump in there just with the fact that my fear is you get separated in hotels or resorts. If you can have them all in one place, that's almost like a prison for them, because, you know, where they really stay on property the entire time. And, you know, when you have 8 or 12 and some are getting out for the first time in 6 months, they go a little crazy. And so for me, the Secession situation was so perfect, as we were all on site. No one was drinking and driving. We could be as crazy as we wanted, you know, in those private cottages that are just so perfect. And I just don't think you have that when you are at a resort. There's other resorts that have started, Pinehurst, for example, our good friend Tom Pashley, and they've created kind of those villas and cottages. But the private clubs do it so well now. I just can't see ourselves going anywhere else but to one of those experiences.
Yeah, I would say.
And there's so many of them. And there's so many of them popping up, right? That are kind of following that Secession model. Yeah,
I was just gonna second that. Because it's true, when you do get into a hotel, it doesn't feel like a cohesive group anymore. Even if you have a roommate, where if you're in a cottage or a bunch of cottages, you know, the guys that want to go to bed, and the guys that want to stay up and have a few more glasses of wine and laugh, do that. And it's just perfect for everybody. And I always felt as the planner, I wanted to know where everybody was, especially when we were at my club. I didn't want anybody driving a golf cart into the pond. Although we did have one from Scotland that did drive into a bunker, and he spent a little time in there before he could get out.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to the pro, hey, one of my guys drove a, he's not used to driving a golf cart. He just wrecked he just drove into the bunker behind 11 greens. And it took him a while to get out. And the pro said, any harm to golfer or golf hole? And I said, neither. And he goes, don't worry about it.
Was that Both Bay?
Yeah, it was at Both Bay, yeah.
Yeah, which was another fantastic. And the element that I wanted to do is that we discovered this magically with the core group, and that, guess what? They were great chefs too. And, you know, and while the food was pretty good at these golf clubs, we found out that, you know, the Greek connection from Chicago do this incredible dish. And then we had, you know, two of our other guys that, you know, had do this almost professionally as far as the shrimp and the steaks and all that stuff. And so that's when we evolved from being a golf group to kind of a foodie and a wine, and the golf started being pushed back. It was, the camaraderie was number one, getting together with that group again, that unconditional love for those guys. But then food became second, wine became third, and golf was 4 or 5. And everybody asked me, do I not need to be a good golfer to be in the Blue Elephants? Absolutely not. And so, and I think that's...
In fact, we frown on it.
Yes. Yeah.
You've just got to bring something unique to it. And sometimes something unique is to be the first guy that pays every time. And,
yeah.
And we all know who that is.
Yeah, there was it.
And that's a good attribute, isn't it?
There's a constant of our group who, when I would send out the invite, he would FedEx the check over because I think he was...
He didn't want you changing your mind?
A little afraid.
Yeah.
That he might be on the edge. So he wanted to make sure to be the first to sign up, and he was the first to sign up every single time.
And I would say at the start he should have been a little afraid, but now it's flip-flop. It was one of Michael's only good invitations he put out, but I would say he's favorite of yours, Rick, rather than even over Michael as well.
Yeah, I'll take the bill payers every day. Yeah. And you know, I used to have to send out the email of shame. I think I told you, Blair, one time that if I could have written off my losses from Blue Elephants,
yeah,
I wouldn't have paid income tax through that whole period. So
yeah. We did make a mistake.
So
we did make a mistake on
just a mistake.
On a few occasions. I think I did, where I bought people of influence in my life, influence meaning my bosses and stuff like that. And that didn't work out. And I learned quickly on that you can't totally relax. And they might have even influenced business for me in the long run. And again, that was a mistake. So I would just say for groups putting these together, you know, have people who are just, it's just based on total friendships and no business involved.
Yeah, you really have. You really have to stick
to
your 3 a.m. friends, right? Like, yeah. I feel like if I needed something, I could call either one of you at 3 in the morning and you pick up. And that's the core of a successful golf trip.
Yep.
And we have known those people through work, but it's not the work that drives it. This is not a corporate entertaining thing. As a matter of fact, if there's that kind of hierarchy in place where somebody feels beholden to someone else, it really queers the trip. But it just creates this odd vibe on the trip the whole time, doesn't it?
And not just for the person who invited their boss or even client, but for everybody.
Yes.
That's a good piece of advice.
Yeah, I would advise you against that. Coming up next.
The next morning, I'm shaking the cobwebs off, and I looked on the dining table, and there was a ceramic rabbit there. And I thought, oh, my God.
So I want to bring up... A turning point in the Blue Elephants. And I think there's a lot to be learned from this. And I'm curious what happened here. And I'm just going to give it and say two words and ask you guys to say, to tell me what happened. Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. I would say it was.
Well, for everybody's benefit, Blair, why don't we... Tell everybody why that was a turning point for the Elephants.
I'm trying to be diplomatic in this as much as I can, but I won't. Look, it, on paper, it looked fantastic. Myrtle Beach is some of the best golf courses in the world there. They really, truly are. We played a couple of them, but the combination, I think, of feeling, and albeit we were in a house and we had that camaraderie and all that stuff, but I don't know, the model of, you know, going to a resort or going to other resorts and being around other golfers, I don't know if it just fits for us. It just felt secession, even Bulls Bay. When we go to even Troon, I've heard you say this in some of the clubs where we play the members, it just feels like we're home, we're at a club that accepts us and all that sort of stuff. So that's probably, I felt it was a little bit of a mistake.
It was a big size group. I always thought it was just too big of a group. I think we were. Right. I think we were 20. And as typically it happens, the bigger you get, sometimes the bad comes in. I think the omen for that trip was on one of our friends, and then after this trip, didn't want to be associated with us anymore in terms of the Blue Elephants. Brought a friend who, on the first hole of the first day, was had his leg hanging out from the golf cart and just casually kicked one of those foot-high green stakes that holds the ropes in, broke his leg, and had to go to the hospital. And that felt to me like a little like the omen that was going to doom the trip.
That trip. So we went to a very nice venue.
Beautiful.
For dinner one night underneath the 500-year-old live oaks and on the water, and it was lovely. And it got a little raucous. It got a lot raucous.
Oh yeah.
And the place was museum like, and a private dining club. And the next morning, I'm shaking the cobwebs off, and I looked on the dining table, and there was a ceramic rabbit there. And I thought, oh my God. And when I lifted it up and looked at the bottom, it had a number on it, like you do to catalog antiques in a museum. So we got in the car, and we drove over to the guardhouse, and I handed it to the guard and backed up and left and never said a word. He didn't say a word, but the rabbit made its way home safely, thank God. Mm-hmm.
I honestly think it was the side. I think we had a great time. Myrtle's a great place, and it's a great guys golf destination and you can have a variety of experiences there, from private to resort to public.
Yeah,
I think it was the size of the group. I think we brought in too many people too quickly, and they kind of didn't learn the vibe of the Blue Elephants, and so we really lost control of it.
Really, no better guys golf destination in the East Coast than Myrtle Beach. I mean, it just offers so much, and you can spend as little or as much as you want to spend on the golf and the lodging and the food.
Yeah.
I think that's true. The group just got a little out of hand. I remember we did it that year mainly because of cost, because it was at a tough time yeah. the economy for all of us. But probably, our core group would have had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I had a great time. I'm not saying that. I just think, that's enough about Myrtle.
Yeah, it was certainly a fork in the road for the group. So definitely. So it's not necessarily the larger, but it felt like too many new people at once. So when you think about some of the best trips, not even with this group, which we've talked a lot about and we're super proud about, but just in all of your trips, when you think about it and I say, tell me about the best trips, what aspects of those trips come to mind? And is there a way to kind of engineer those aspects ahead of time?
Yeah, I think a key component, certainly a rhythm in the golf course to me, where I really have fun and I don't necessarily need to play well, is a pace of play and is a caddy. And for me, when the caddies are top notch, like they were at Secession, Michael, we had this conversation a few weeks ago when you went to a resort and caddy was okay the first day. And luckily I knew a couple of folks over there, and you said it was just 5x better with a caddy that was handpicked. So for me, the great trips really are absolutely on the golf course. It really doesn't matter how I play. I'm disappointed if I don't play well, but I just love a really good caddy, good fast play. We probably focus less on the golf now. We don't do the 36 holes anymore. We focus on, a few beers after lunch, an emergency 6, emergency 9. And then it's, you know, the great trips for me are on site, and we're having 3 hours on the porch drinking before dinner, and, you know, just reminiscing and hearing Michael's laugh, that chuckle that he has makes me laugh. And it's usually when Rick's holding court. So it's that kind of that plan thing. You can plan it with the caddies. It's fine, you know, to find really good resorts, but find good resorts with strong caddy programs. I would say they're a big component of a great trip.
It certainly adds immeasurably to the experience. And if they're good caddies, they know it's as much about, you know, pulling a club and giving a yardage and reading a green as much as it's keeping, you know, the group entertained and keeping it moving along.
So agree with that. And I think, you know, over all those years, I got a complaint about a caddy one time, and since, and we're talking about dozens and dozens of rounds of golf. Mm-hmm. I only got a complaint one time, and since we're leaving the names out of it, I won't say who it was, but it was somebody that was on their last trip that year, and because it just didn't happen.
Yeah. So, you know, when you are building a new resort or a new or building onto a private club that has that you're going to do those cottages around it, you know, I would say that the caddy master is probably one of the most important people at that property. They make it tick. I know the old pro at Secession, I would be doing a disservice if I didn't mention him, but he was the glue to our trips there. His relationship with Rick and I was just, he was like a grandfather to me. You just felt that you were home, and Greg, the caddy master, you know, knew my style, knew what type of caddy I liked, et cetera, and never had a bad one. And it was just, you know, there was just a lot of positivity in the group time after time after time.
The quality of the golf and potentially the reputation of the golf, especially some of these destination clubs that are being built with big names, architects, certainly gets the attraction. But I think what keeps people coming back and mm-hmm. tells their friends is that experience, is that hospitality that you feel at home and that you feel welcome there. And we've been fortunate to be in some of those places. Guys, we're kind of coming up on time. Any last words of advice from your numerous golf, whether it's part of the Blue Elephants and this amazing club that we've created, or even other trips that, you know, if you're sitting out there and thinking about, hey, I know a few guys I want to pull together, put yourself back in that car ride back from North Georgia, Rick.
Yeah,
what would you share with people that we haven't shared already?
To be the main planner is both fun and can be frustrating. I would say to try to get a lieutenant or two. You know, put one in charge of the food and put another one in charge of the tee times or the groups. And then you always have somebody to send complainers to. Didn't like the group they played with. Didn't like this or that. Well, you need to go talk to so-and-so because that's out of my hands. I think probably would be my only advice other than the types of people that you invite.
Yeah, that's a great one. Having somebody run the games is the big
and
one.
Hopefully that's the same person every year so that everybody mm-hmm. knows who to go to.
Yeah. I would say less is more. We learned that as we look back at that car ride. You know, I envisioned 12, 16, 18, 20. I was wrong. You know, it's a core 8 or maybe max 12. I probably can't do the, you know, if we go back to Scotland again, which we will, not if, we will go back to Scotland. But, you know, I think one destination, one unpacking is the way to go and make that your your and go from out with, you know, don't go cross country or up north, or, you know, stay up north and just, you know, fire out from there, play the good ones twice. Don't try and tick every box, but just one unpacking. And then, you know, the barman gets to know you better. The locals get to know you better. And if you can call the club in advance, like a Dornoch or a Nairn, and, hey, would you like to do a club match? We've been very lucky in just my connections in Scotland and my dad, is that we played against, other clubs, and it's been a lot of fun. And you said that before, Michael, where that's the differentiator when you go to those clubs and play on a Saturday. You know, it's not, people can still do it. Just call the club up and see if there's a group.
Yeah, it especially goes a long way to kind of get there in advance. Well, Blair, Rick, I've really enjoyed walking down memory lane here. I think there's been a lot of great advice. So I want to thank you both for that. I want to thank you, of course, for your friendship and all the laughs we've had. We'll have to do another one of these where we tell all the really, really bad stories and some of Rick's excellent jokes. I have to put a disclaimer that it's probably not safe for work. But thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you soon. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're looking for more inspiration, ideas, or insider tips on creating your best golf trip, please continue to check out Golf Buddies on Tour wherever you stream your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to check us out on Instagram for the latest and greatest news and information.